Welcome to the RotoWire NBA podcast, sponsored by DraftKings. It's Tuesday, February 6th. Nick Whalen here with Alex Berutha on Johnny Flynn's 29th birthday. Oh. The Johnny Flynn, the sixth overall pick in the illustrious 2009 NBA draft. I was a huge, huge Johnny Flynn guy in college at Syracuse. I think pretty much everyone around our age loved Johnny Flynn, loved that Syracuse team. Obviously, injuries got the best of him. I maintain that had he stayed healthy, you know, I think he would be a multi-time All-Star, a multi-time gold medalist, a lock for the Hall of Fame. But nonetheless, happy 29th birthday to Johnny Flynn. Do you know which team he finished his NBA career for? No recollection of this ever happening. But he started in Minnesota, of course, went to Houston, and then played 18 games for another team in 2012.
You're just going to have to give that one to me.
The Portland Trailblazers.
That didn't happen.
That did happen.
That's a typo.
In October of 2012, he signed with the Pistons and was waived after training camp. He was involved with the trade that sent him to Portland along with Hasheem Thabeet.
Oh.
So not many guys can say they were drafted in the top six overall and were also traded for the guy who went number two in that draft,
right,
Hasheem Thabeet. 2009 draft, by the way, ended up being sneaky good. Without looking at every draft, I would say just off the top, you know, guys that went top 10, this has to be one of the two or three best of the last 10 to 15 years. You get Blake at one. Thabeet, we don't have to talk about that. He went to, but then you got Harden at three, Tyreke Evans, who was the rookie of the year that year, at four. Rubio 5, Flynn 6, Stephen Curry, Warriors point guard Steph Curry, at 7, Jordan Hill at 8 to the Knicks, DeMar DeRozan 9, Brandon Jennings 10. The middle of this draft, not so great. Picks like 11 through 16.
Yeah, I mean, there's
not a lot of production there.
There's some Drew Holiday,
right?
Jeff
Drew Holiday
in there.
Yeah, the 17 to 30 was not bad, but the late lottery and early non-lottery, the best player to go between 11 and 16 was Gerald Henderson.
Yeah,
I don't think anyone else in that range. I guess James Johnson at 16, maybe.
I see this was the John Brockman draft,
right? Also the Roddy Bobois draft.
Okay.
And the Byron Mullins draft.
Roddy Bobois may be one of the best NBA names that has ever come through.
I actually just saw something on Twitter about him the other day. He's bouncing around Europe. So he's still playing basketball.
Still
not in the
there.
NBA. But he's playing. Danny Green was the 46th pick in that draft.
I see that to Cleveland.
He actually ranks fourth in value over replacement in this draft. Harden 1, Curry 2, Blake 3, Danny Green, and then Drew Holiday. Interesting.
Okay.
And then after Drew Holiday is Tyreke Evans, who we want to talk about right away. So he hasn't played in, what, a week or so?
It feels like
not a week. It's been close to a week. The Grizzlies pretty much transparently sitting him out and saying, we don't want to hurt him because we're going to trade him. And that's not really a surprise. I guess it's somewhat of a surprise for a team to do it that blatantly. But, you know, when you're in the position that the Grizzlies are, you know, having just ruled out Mike Conley for the year, having, you know, being 16 games under 500 in the Western Conference, like, you know, you could kind of read between the lines. So, you know, what are the destinations right now for Tyreke Evans? I think Boston's emerging as an option. Philly's supposedly in there.
Denver was one. I think there's one more that I'm
missing. I want to say Portland.
Yeah, that might be.
I mean, there are
one.
A lot of teams that want Tyreke Evans.
Right.
I think Denver and Boston kind of seem like the top two options right now.
Yeah, and I mean, because those are both teams that, I mean, Boston's kind of, I mean, all in is the wrong word, but they're trying to, I mean, they're trying to win the finals. I mean, you know, at this
point. Well,
they're
in this unique position where they can go all in, but can also maybe get the number two pick in the draft. And
right.
And, you know, when you're going all in, like four of your top 10 guys are, you know, 23 and under.
And part of the reason, I mean, a lot of these teams are hesitant to trade for Tyreke Evans, who could actually use them a lot, is because it's just basically a rental. But the Celtics, out of probably all those teams, except maybe Denver to some extent, probably care the least about a rental, potentially, because they have Greg Monroe right now, who's essentially also a rental. And then even if the Celtics let Tyreke Evans and Greg Monroe walk at the end of the season, They get Gordon Hayward back. And so at that point, what could they lose by doing that, by trading for Tyreke Evans, mm-hmm. unless, you know, they, I don't know how much they
would
give up.
I don't
know
that they need Tyreke Evans.
I don't know either.
Although I think you can kind of, it's kind of implied that if you get Tyreke Evans, maybe you're sending out like a Marcus Smart. So you kind of create a hole and then you fill the hole with Evans.
Yeah. I'm just not sure. I mean, I guess you take the Marcus Smart risk, quote unquote, if you're Memphis, because he's gonna walk, so you have to take something. I mean, you're not just gonna keep him. And Marcus Smart's obviously a good player on defense, and his offense is still pretty bad. But I don't know.
Pretty
bad. I would like to see him on the Nuggets too. I mean, they're a team that I think he would fit because he's kind of like multi-positional. He's a ball handler. Mm-hmm. He can also cut. He's kind of like the better Will Barton to some extent. Although a lot of people you talk to is very much.
I think Will Barton would tell you that that's not the case. So if you're Boston or if you're Denver, is it worth surrendering a first round pick? Because I think Tyreke Evans, especially based on what, you know, other players who have garnered first round picks at the deadline, the one I always go back to is like Bogdanović last year. Like,
yeah.
If Washington was willing to give up what turned out to be, I don't even know what, the 20th, 21st pick, something like that for Bogdanović. And you can't apply that rule universally, but it's like Tyreke Evans is much better than Bogdanović.
Right.
And I think you can kind of use that precedent to say, like, if you want this guy, you're going to have to get a first-round pick. You know, there's been talk that, you know, Denver could trade Moutier to Boston to get Smart, but Boston, of course, would want a first-rounder included in that deal, and then Boston would use that first-rounder to send, you know, to Memphis for Tyreke.
Okay.
That's what I've heard. The crux of that deal would be, is it worth it for Denver to lose that first? Whether they're ending up with Smart or Evans, it doesn't matter.
I mean, they have actually like a lot of relatively young talent they aren't playing. Mm-hmm. So do they really need that pick? I mean, they have Malik Beasley, who's like, what are the chances that you use that pick to get a player that's a lot better than Malik Beasley?
Right.
Torrey Craig, Juan Hernan Gomez. Yeah.
How could you possibly get someone better than Torrey Craig? Right.
But, you know, I mean, but picks in that range, I mean, it's, mm-hmm. there's like a 50% chance you draft someone worse than Torrey Craig,
yeah.
to some extent. So, you know, being able to get Tyreke Evans, even if it's for a year, and maybe you convince him to stay. I don't know if they exactly have the money for that. Not mm-hmm. a lot of teams have cap room next year. But I think the Nuggets look at this like they're playing really well right now, even without Paul Millsap. Paul Millsap comes back, you basically, you know, you have a starting lineup of theoretically like Murray, Harris, Tyreke Evans, Trey Lyles maybe, and then, Millsap, and then Jokic. And then your bench is essentially Will Barton, Trey Lyles, Malik Beasley, like those kind of guys. So, you know, I mean, I think they're a team that can compete really hard in the West. They're basically on fire right now on offense. I just read something how they've been practicing like a lot less, and it's been working for them. But I think that's what a lot of teams are doing at this point in the year. They're in that mid tier West spot where I feel like most of those teams are generally as good as one another. I mean, you're talking kind of Portland, OKC, Denver, all in that mm-hmm. tier.
Yeah, I mean, OKC at 30-24, they've lost four in a row. You know, they're 11.5 back of Golden State. You can go all the way down to the Clippers at number 9. They're 13.5 back of Golden State. There's only two games separating the Clippers and the Thunder, which is crazy. And then, of course, within that range, you have Portland, Denver, and New Orleans. Utah lurking a couple games back of the Clippers. I think they're still on the fence as to what they want to do. But as you alluded to, like, if you're giving up a first-round pick, especially this late in the year, you're doing it with the expectation that whatever you're getting back for that pick is going to depreciate the draft pick that you're sending out, right?
Yeah.
So, like, right now, Denver would be picking 19th, theoretically. Mm-hmm. You know, let's say if you're adding Marcus Smart, you're adding Tyreke Evans, plus you're getting Millsap back, I think they would expect that pick ends up being 22, 23, 24,
yeah.
something like that. And at that point, it becomes a little more easy to rationalize, but there's always the risk that it goes the other way. Although in this scenario, barring an injury to Jokic or you know, Gary Harris or something like that, it's really hard to see that, you know, becoming a lottery pick.
Yeah, and I agree, and we're seeing some of these, you know, the West has gotten kind of weird, especially since you might kind of mention Utah has been playing a lot better since they got Gobert back. Ricky Rubio's doing that thing where he plays really well for like 15 games of the season. And Portland's not, I don't see Portland going too much in either direction at this point. I think they kind of are, they are who we think they are. Yeah, OKC slide since Robertson's been out, it's been pretty significant. I feel they're not going to continue, you know, winning 20% of their games, obviously, but they had no depth to work with. And so at this point, I mean, if we ended up, you know, in an OKC Denver series, I would just pick Denver. Like at this point, I have a lot of faith in the Nuggets, probably more than most people. So I wouldn't blame them for doing this Tyreek trade, because in that scenario where you assume they get Tyreek Evans, I just think they have more overall talent. Like, I think the Nuggets bench would just destroy whoever's out there for the Thunder.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the rotation shortened in the playoffs, obviously.
That's true.
I mean, you're going to have Russ, PG, and probably Melo by default, and Steven Adams. I mean, that
42 minutes a game.
40 minutes. I mean, yeah. I mean, Paul George has basically been playing 40 minutes a game this year. So has Russ when they've needed him. Yeah, they're in trouble. I mean, that's the thing, though. When you build a roster like that, and we've harped on this before, like every super team, with the exception of the Warriors, you just don't have a bench. That's the trade-off. When you build a team like that, you go all in, you stack your salaries and your top three or four guys, and then you just fill out around them. I mean, we can talk about the Thunder. I mean, are they in play for any of these guys? I mean, the thing is, if you're Memphis and you're being offered a first-round pick from Denver and you're being offered a first-round pick from, you know, Boston, you're being offered first-rounders all over the place, you might not choose OKC, which, you know, right now would have the worst pick, which is a team, you know, it's pretty much unimaginable to think that OKC wouldn't make the playoffs.
Right.
And that's kind of the way Memphis might have to think if they have multiple first round pick offers on the table.
Yeah. And I mean, and there's probably a possibility, Doug, if you can get the, you know, if you're trading with either Boston or Denver, that you'll probably get, maybe you might get Marcus Smart or Moutier along with a pick.
Right.
So you kind of get two shots there.
Do you want Moutier?
Well, you just take him if he's handed to you, right? I don't know.
I love that report, and I retweeted this the other day. It was like, Nuggets are dangling Emmanuel Moutier in trade for Marcus Smart. Like, dangling? I think it's like the other way around at best. Moutier's value is as low as it's ever been.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, if there's one place or one coach who, it wouldn't surprise you, was able to get something out of him, it would be Brad Stevens.
That is true. And if the Grizzlies try to trade with OKC, maybe they get Terrence Ferguson. So what do they get with the, do they get anything with the first round pick? Are you really banking on any of those picks being significantly worse than the other ones?
See, that's a good question. I mean, I think guys like Donovan Mitchell and probably to an even stronger degree, Kyle Kuzma, like, they raise the value of these late firsts. You know, I think if you're the Grizzlies, you see Kyle Kuzma go 27 and you think, all right, hey, if we can get this extra pick, we can get the next Kuzma. And if you look at Memphis's draft history, there's nothing whatsoever to suggest that they would do that. but I think, you know, guys like that panning out and becoming big time contributors right away has at least made those first round picks a little more interesting in the 20 to 30 range.
I think so, but isn't some of that just recency bias
to some extent?
I mean maybe it's easier to sell to your fan base, or you're convinced that your scouts can do the same thing, but historically, I mean, I don't think the fact that picks after 15 aren't, that you're basically, I mean, I don't want to say they're shots in the dark, but to try to get someone as good as Kuzma is a shot in the dark, right, after 15. So
yeah, I just think it's not really a throwaway. You know, I think to the casual fan, it's hard to get excited if you get the 27th pick. You know, like at the time that D'Angelo Russell was traded and number 27 came back to Brooklyn, or came back to LA, it was like, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, cut to mid-October and it's Kuzmania.
Yeah. I don't know. Some fan bases get people on Bucks Twitter were getting mad about the Bucks giving up that second round pick for Tyler Zeller. So, I mean, certain fan bases can't even. You know, they get really touchy about certain picks. Other fan bases are like, screw it, we'll take we'll take Tyreek Evans.
Bucks fans in particular have been burned by stuff like that
for a long time.
Giving up picks taking the wrong player a pick before the other player. I mean, the guy that was involved in the Zeller trade, you know, Rashad Vaughn was picked, what, one spot before Bobby Portis? Not that Bobby Portis is a perennial all-star, but the Bucks got nothing out of Rashad Vaughn for 3 years. He's been less impactful in his third NBA season than he was in either of his first two.
Yes.
And the Bucks could certainly use a guy like Bobby Portis, especially tonight. I don't know if you saw Henson is out.
I did see that.
So
yeah.
They're going to be without like six guys.
Yeah.
We'll talk about the Bucks in a second. I just wanted to do the draft daily read. Okay. I wanted to ask you, what's better than fantasy sports?
Nothing.
The future of fantasy sports.
Oh.
Correct. The Fantasy Gold team is bringing you just that. Welcome to DraftDaily.com. It's crypto, it's currency, it's sports. DraftDaily.com is the new standard in the DFS industry. With almost non-existent fees, 100% trackable transactions, and 0% risk of chargebacks, we are taking the industry by storm, making the game we all love both safer, and cheaper to play. We brought fantasy sports and blockchain technology together to create the ultimate user experience and platform in DraftDaily.com. On DraftDaily.com, our users can play without worry and without fees, digging into their profits. DraftDaily introduces cryptocurrencies to the masses. What better way to do that than to merge crypto with fantasy? On DraftDaily, you play with and you win cryptocurrency. Secure your place in history. Play on DraftDaily.com today, where players and the game they love are the focus. All right, so we'll play on DraftDaily.com.
The Bulls should have traded the Jordan Bell pick for cryptocurrency instead of actual cash, I think.
No one's done it yet. They could be the first.
Yeah.
We'll see. The Bucks should have sent in some cryptocurrency in the Zeller deal. So let's talk about that quickly. I mean, this isn't gonna really move the needle all that much in the grand scheme of things, but the Bucks basically gave away a dead asset in Rashad Vaughn, a guy they probably weren't going to bring back next year, certainly weren't going to sign to an extension after his rookie deal's up, for a player in Zeller who, you know, has completely fallen out of the Nets rotation. But I don't know that it's because of his performance. You know, I think it's just more of the Nets wanting to get their first-round pick in Jahlil Okafor, more minutes at center. And I think this was a smart move by the Bucks. I mean, you buy really low on Zeller. You send a second-round pick, which, you know, you never love to lose those, but the Bucks were in need of center depth. Zeller's a big-time upgrade over Marshall Plumlee.
Yeah.
At times, he's probably an upgrade over Thon Maker. And it kind of just gives the Bucks a little bit more insurance in a situation like tonight when, you know, John Henson is hurt.
Yeah, and, you know, yeah, like you mentioned, I think the main reason Zeller wasn't in the rotation at some point was because he's 28. He's kind of he's older than I thought he was, but I don't think that's necessarily trading a second-round pick for a 28-year-old is a bad thing for the Bucks, who probably want to compete in the next 3 years. And Zeller he's also on a bargain deal. He's being paid like essentially $1.5 million over the next 2 years each year. And he does have a better three-point percentage than Thon Maker, I think, which is interesting. I didn't know Zeller was shooting threes this year until I looked. He's like 10 for 26. And
is he going to be in the three-point shootout or at All-Star or no? I don't think so.
You know, maybe we'll just have to see. Maybe they'll pivot him
injury replacement.
Yeah, injury replacement, Tyler Zeller. But I mean, as ridiculous as that sounds, I mean, the Bucks just basically need someone who can box out and actually grab rebounds and be a physical screener. And like I like John Henson, but you know, I mean, I went to the Knicks game recently, and you know, he couldn't box out anybody. I mean, not that Cantor's easy to box out, but it was pretty bad. And I don't know. I think the Bucks having floor spacing at the center position is really important for Giannis, because when you have Giannis and Henson out there, I mean, there is no floor spacing.
Right.
And that kind of puts them in a bind. So even if Zeller only shoots 30% on threes, I think that option is still kind of important to have and is an underrated part of really just what they got.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of what they, in theory, want when Thon's on the court.
Right.
And it works, but, I mean, you talk about Henson getting beat on the boards. I mean, Maker gets absolutely killed on the glass. And we should say Henson had 18 rebounds on Sunday.
Against the Nets.
Against the Nets. So that's a little asterisk there. And this also works out really well. You got to wonder if the Bucks planned this. Like, they're in Brooklyn on Sunday. The trade goes down Monday afternoon. And Zeller's just like, I think he just kind of like left the Nets and went over just across town.
Took a taxi.
The Bucks, and he's going to be available tonight. So, yeah, I mean, again, not a deal that's really going to move the needle in the grand scheme of things. But I think this is a good deal for the Bucks. I think Tyler Zeller was considered like a pretty good player not that long ago. And the fact that he's just been stuck on, you know, a Brooklyn team this year that doesn't really have a direction, I think has artificially lowered his value than it actually is.
He was always one of those guys where I felt I never thought he deserved like huge minutes, but I felt like it was weird that teams kept dumping him for nothing.
Yeah.
Like I felt like he was a good backup center, kind of an option, like 15, 20 minutes a game and almost like Aaron Baines.
Mm-hmm.
And he might have that chance now. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, ex-teammate of John Henson in college as well. So
that's true. They played
a connection there. Yeah,
they play on the same. They play on the court at the same time ever. I assume so. I mean, yeah,
Henson was a power forward for that team.
That's right, he was. Those are the days.
That was the days. And maybe Kendall Marshall's next.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. If you're looking for a credit card that fits your lifestyle, look no further. U.S. Bank has credit cards that make every day rewarding, no matter what you're into. Feeling hungry? Check out the U.S. Bank Altitude Go Visa Signature Card. Earn 4x points on takeout, food delivery, and dining. And get 2x points at gas stations, grocery stores, and on streaming. That'll keep your wallet and your mouth full. Big spender? The U.S. Bank Visa Platinum Card has a low intro APR for large purchases or balance transfers. And you call the shots with the U.S. Bank Cash Plus Visa Signature Card. Choose two categories each quarter. Earn 5% back on your first $2,000 of eligible purchases from those categories. So don't just get a credit card, get the right card to make every day more rewarding. Cash back, merchandise, travel rewards, and low intro APRs are waiting. Learn more at usbank.com/creditcard. The creditor and issuer of these cards is U.S. Bank National Association, pursuant to a license from Visa USA, Inc., and the cards are available to United States residents only. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
Okay, where do you want to go here? Blake Griffin?
Sure.
Okay, so you had a chance to watch, I know, at least parts of Blake's first couple games in Detroit. Early takeaways?
They look really good. I watched the first game and the third game basically in their entirety. And it's very like the difference, you know, I was kind of worried. I thought about it at first when the trade went down. I was a little worried that, you know, Blake Drummond would be just really similar to Blake DeAndre. It's not even close. Drummond is so much better, in my opinion, than DeAndre Jordan, just all around. Having him as an offensive threat can really just, I mean, the way they move the ball around, I mean, they just are running circles. It kind of felt like a different version of the Nets to me, where it's like these dribble handoffs from the big men who can all pass, and they just have wings who can just shoot the lights out, essentially. Guys like Anthony Tolliver, like Bullock, Kennard's out there more than he used to be, and Stanley Johnson sometimes scores 20, sometimes scores zero. But I really liked it. I thought it looked really smooth. I don't know if they'll make the playoffs, but it, you know, if they snuck into the eight seed, it wouldn't surprise me the way they're looking now.
Yeah, I mean, I think no one was really sure how this was going to turn out. You know, we went over on two pods last week, you know, talking about the rationale for both sides and why they did it. And I mean, this is basically why, right? If you're Detroit, you kind of wanted that wing slash interior facilitator. You know, as good of a passer as Drummond is, which he doesn't really get credit for, he's not exactly a playmaker. You know, he's not, so he couldn't really do much off the dribble, and that's kind of Blake's specialty. I guess I was a little concerned about how this would work. You know, the popular rhetoric, like you said, was they're just trying what worked for a couple years in LA.
Yeah.
And, you know, is it really going to be all that much better? And, you know, we're still only four games in, but yeah, I mean, I've watched bits and pieces of these last three games, and Blake seems like a seamless fit so far. I mean, it seems like they've welcomed him and what he brings to the offense in terms of just kind of being the guy. Like everyone else on that team seems just okay with handing the reins to him, Drummond included, which I think is really interesting. And I mean, both of those guys, Blake had 6 assists last night against Portland. Drummond had 5. And I just think he's not getting enough credit for Drummond, that is, for how good of a passer.
Oh, yeah.
DeAndre Jordan had 5 assists one time in a game over the last 2 years. You know, and obviously part of that's because he's playing with Blake Griffin, he's playing with Chris Paul, they're not asking him to do those things, but I would be hard pressed to believe that, you know, he could average 5 assists per game like Drummond is right now if the Clippers asked him to do that.
No, not at all. And that's been the thing with Drummond all year, just, I mean, his increased passing and really just, you know, you can almost run the offense through him, which before the year he was one of those guys where I was like, I don't know if Drummond is like he's shooting 37% on free throws. What's his actual value? Is he really going to get any better than this? He completely proved me wrong. And I should say, I said earlier that I didn't think the Pistons would make the playoffs. That's probably wrong. They're basically tied with Philly right now for the eighth seed, which I think will be a battle, actually, for that eighth seed spot.
Yeah, I mean, the East is literally changing by the night.
Yeah.
The Bucks were in seventh place like 3 days ago, and you know now they're in fifth. And basically five through eight is going to change. You know, any of those teams, as we talked about last week, could end up as high as five or as low as, you know, nine or ten when it's all said and done.
Yeah. And I haven't had a chance to watch the Clippers yet, so I kind of want to – I'm going to hold, you know, like a real opinion on how it works out for them until – I actually watched one of their games, but their team may not even – I mean, they might try to trade Avery. I've heard they might try to trade Avery Bradley. DeAndre is obviously still on the table. I'm not super convinced that will happen, that he'll get traded, but their team is still, in my opinion, probably in flux.
I don't even know if the on-court results are going to tell us anything for the Clippers.
No.
You know, like I don't think they honestly care all that much. I think the result of the trade was that they got off of Blake's contract, and that was it. You know, they – Tobias Harris is a nice player. Avery Bradley is a nice player. Bradley's expiring. Harris is expiring after next year. You know, the return on their trade was basically done the second that the trade went through. You know, like if they're 2-0 since making the trade. You know, if they go on a nice little run, make a cute little spirited run for the eight seed, that's great. If they fall back and pick ninth or tenth, I think they're fine with that too.
Yeah.
But yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, if Lou Williams ends up sticking around, which I don't think is all that likely, and then Austin Rivers comes back, you know, in the next week or two, does Bradley start coming off the bench? Does Rivers start coming off the bench? Like, if you know, and I hesitate to do this, but if you're looking at the fantasy value of Avery Bradley, I would be a little concerned about the, you know, the forthcoming Austin Rivers return.
He's been kind of off all year as far as fantasy. Like, he's kind of you almost may as well just stream someone else and take your chances there. At least that's how it's felt to me. Same with like Andrew Wiggins to some extent, which is kind of alarming to say, but you know, it's just fantasy wise those guys aren't that valuable.
Who would have thought that Avery Bradley would be averaging now 2.5 rebounds after 6.1 rebounds per game last year, which was like more than double his career average?
Did
we ever get to the bottom of that, by the way?
It was, I think, just...
He had more rebounds at, like, the All-Star break last year than he had the entire season combined.
I think they just asked him to do that because they were... I mean, the Celtics were such a bad rebounding team. I'm just looking at our projections for him this year, and, I mean, we predict him for a pretty bit... We predict him for 4.5 rebounds.
Right. I was responsible for a lot of those projections. Yeah, I remember thinking, like, I don't know, there's no way he gets to 6 again. We'll play it safe and go 4.5.
Yeah, because his rebounding numbers prior to that year were not even, you know, no one saw that coming. So, but yeah, now he's almost a career low in rebounding, which I guess playing next to Drummond is.
Can you just flip the switch when you're a guard rebounding? Like, is it just like, oh, we need you to grab 3 more rebounds a game? He's like, all right, I can just do that.
I think that a lot of that just comes down to like whether the big men box out and don't go for it, and they just let the guards run in, or the kind of, you know, the Russell Westbrook situation.
I think Westbrook actually did prove that theory.
Yeah.
Oh, we have some breaking news from this trade. Willie Reed, the guy, the forgotten hero of this trade, maybe not so much of a hero actually. Suspended 6 games. After a domestic violence incident. Don't know any of the details, but the fact that he's already suspended 6 games...
Not good.
...doesn't sound great.
No.
So, yeah, I really don't have anything else to say about that.
Neither do I.
Not a good situation, if you're Willie Reed. Okay, we have to talk about DraftKings. They have not given us a promo read. So we basically just have to come up with our own. And I have a list of talking points. When you're playing on DraftKings, there's no season-long commitment. Is that correct?
That's good.
That is correct.
It's daily.
You and I are actually co-managing a season-long team in the office. It has not gone well. It's gone very poorly, in fact.
I would prefer... Your name is... It is Team Whalen.
It is. I'm looking at it right now. We're in 17th place out of 20. Lonzo Ball's been in the lineup for 2 weeks. he hasn't played in a long time.
Auction drafts were never my strong suit.
Well, that's the thing. When you're in a 20-team auction, it's tough. The best lineup we've put out there included Dante Cunningham before the Boogie Cousins injury. and Denzel Valentine. So that,
but you won't run into these problems if you're on DraftKings because there's no commitment.
Because on DraftKings.com, you don't have to check your fantasy team and see, oh, Lonzo Ball's been in my lineup for at least 2 weeks and he hasn't played at all during that time. Oh, Jameer Nelson's not playing this week because he got traded again. That doesn't happen on DraftKings. All you do is create one lineup or multiple lineups, I guess, for that slate of games. You can create a fresh lineup whenever you want, whether you win or whether you lose that night. It's over. You can start over the next night. You can play with your friends. I have not actually done this, but I've heard I have friends that have done it, particularly for NFL, where you create your own like custom contest. Have you ever done that before?
Yeah, we have one in the office for FanDuel on Wednesdays. But we should be doing it on DraftKings.
We should. We should. FanDuel? What's FanDuel?
I've
never heard of that.
Yeah, I don't know. I
don't know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Kind of a brain malfunction there.
Yeah, I've never even heard of that. So more contests mean more shots to win. That's pretty obvious. And the most important thing when it comes to DraftKings is that when you make your first ever deposit on DraftKings of at least $10, you get a free six-month subscription to RotoWire.com, which I've heard is an excellent, excellent website.
That's the real, yeah, that's the real kicker. Treat there, yeah.
Save that one for last. So DraftKings.com, play there. We play there. It's a lot of fun. Make sure you do that. The Lakers are apparently, giving up is probably a little bit strong, but there are reports today that they may be, we'll say, turning their attention rather than the summer of 2018 to the summer of 2019, which to me indicates that they are kind of coming to terms with the fact that they haven't exactly put out this extremely attractive product for a certain Cavaliers forward to come and play with. So there's two sides of this. One, it's that the Lakers, if you believe this report, might actually be looking at a little more of a long-term approach. Two, what does that mean for LeBron? Because his options seem to be very quickly dwindling.
it would not surprise me that I have no idea. I mean, there's always speculation like LeBron to LA and LeBron to San Antonio or wherever, but I have no idea what LeBron is doing, and that's part of the problem. It wouldn't surprise me if he maybe did like a shorter term thing in Cleveland and just kind of like,
that seems rational, but there's also reports today that he, quote, cussed out two executives, him and Dan Gilbert aren't on speaking terms. Like, it's
not surprising though.
Yeah. And that's not surprising at all. It wouldn't be surprising if they haven't been on speaking terms for 2 years.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone would be surprised by that, but it's hard for, and that's not even talking about what's gone on the court this year. Like, what about this Cleveland team? Obviously Cleveland is home to him, and that carries kind of unknown weight that no other city can really offer. But like, whether you hate the owner, you're probably not on the greatest terms with this new GM who you barely know.
Right.
Who knows where you're at with Ty Lue? You probably hate half the teammates you're with. Like, is re-signing in Cleveland for 1 year all that of that much of an attractive option right now?
No, I don't think so. I mean, yeah, unless they basically flip the whole roster somehow in the offseason or, yeah, I think that's the only way. Maybe that's the only way he would. And he just goes, he's like, you guys got to change, like, all of it. I want it all different. Do it. Who you got to trade? I don't know. I mean, and so the report that came out about the Lakers that was by, I don't want to, it was from ESPN, basically just saying the Lakers are looking at 2019 summer instead due to, I think, a lot of cap room issues surrounding Luol Deng, as well as they have a lot of young, they have Ingram, Randall, Clarkson, Nance, kind of all like playing other guys' positions, but they're all still like good enough. They all deserve playing time, but it's like you can't have all these guys plus a star. So I think they're just kind of into, these guys, maybe they'll just let them play together for another year. They get some more chemistry. They get a little better. And then they can go after the 2019 free agent class, which I think in the article highlighted Klay Thompson, Kawhi Leonard, and Jimmy Butler, who I think are more realistic options to get in free agency than LeBron James, Paul George, and DeMarcus Cousins. I think this is a fine move by the Lakers. It makes sense to me, just based on their cap situation and what the young guys are doing and everything like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I think the juicier storyline is to kind of read between the lines, you know, and it's like, yeah, this is great for the development of Randle and Nance and Lonzo and whoever else, but, you know, this also speaks to what they think about their chances for these guys this summer. Like, does this all of a sudden mean that if the Lakers are, like, it's one thing for them to not understand what's going on with LeBron. Like, no one knows.
Right.
But, I mean, I think LeBron has always been their number one priority, but it was always kind of, you know, LeBron and who else? And that guy has kind of been Paul George. So,
and DeMarcus Cousins. Right. But now,
Cousins is such a unique situation with the injury. I think, like, does this mean, has public opinion or at least opinion within front offices shifted that Paul George won't be on the market this summer now?
I mean, enough to where I don't think the Lakers are willing to gut their team to make cap room about it, you know? And if the Lakers aren't willing to take a risk on a superstar when they figure they can get almost any superstar they want, especially one who always is like, I love LA so much, LA is my home.
Mm-hmm.
Then yeah, I think the Lakers are probably convinced that he is going to stay in OKC. I mean, I don't know, long term, maybe not, but at least probably, you know, next year, mm-hmm. with Carmelo probably being there next year too. And then, you know, Paul George recently had an interview with Rachel Nichols and he basically said the same thing. He was like, I'm leaving my options open. But the fact is, like, I really feel like this Thunder team has legitimate chemistry. He called it a brotherhood. He was like, you know, and they were, you know, before the Roberson thing, which we'll see how that pans out. But they had gotten on a pretty good streak. They looked really good. And it's hard to, you know, I mean, it's hard to count Sam Presti out of making a few good moves and getting a better bench for the team, really, and another year of, you know, another year of playing together under their belt, and they could look a lot better. So yeah, it would not surprise me at this point, like, if Paul George stays. I don't know the percentages, like, if the Lakers think it's a 75% chance, but it's apparently significant enough to where mm-hmm. they are like, we can let this rebuild run for like another year basically and not worry about it.
Yeah, and it's interesting, James and I talked on Thursday just about how, like, mismanaged so many of these teams are. To, like, LeBron James is going to be a free agent this summer, and there is very little evidence to believe that he has any reason to stay in Cleveland. And, like, how many teams are really in play? Like, three, including the Cavs? You know, it's like, it's Houston maybe, LA maybe.
I think the
maybe,
76ers have cap room.
Sixers maybe. Like, teams, you know, when LeBron was a free agent in the past, you know, everybody in the league was just hoping to get a meeting. Yeah, it's like you had to clear cap space just in case. And now it's this time around, I don't think it's because teams don't want LeBron James. I think there's so many teams that would love to be in this mix, like, that just don't, for a number of reasons, just don't have the space, don't have the attractive assets that would require, you know, that LeBron would require to go there. It just seems like, you know, maybe in hindsight, you know, after LeBron won the title 2 years ago, no one was sitting there thinking, oh, this guy's going to be available in 2 years. We got to be ready.
Yep.
You know, but it just, I mean, how quickly things have changed.
Yeah. And I think to some extent that's, I mean, you know, we've gotten to the point where, like, you know, it feels like half the teams are, or not even half the teams, but, like, you know, there's only four or five teams that have a legitimate chance. There's another, like, three or four teams, like, just trying to get past the second round. And then there's like eight teams just bottoming out on purpose. Mm-hmm. And then there's that sweet spot that could actually realistically, you know, is on the come up enough, but not good enough. Right. And they also have the cap room. Like you said, it's like, what, three, four teams.
Well, even look at the traditional powers in the NBA, like LeBron James is a free agent and the Chicago Bulls and the New York Knicks are in no position to even make a pitch. Like,
no.
How crazy is that? The Knicks, what have the Knicks been doing? How, like, this should have been the Knicks' goal
signing
for
Tim Hardaway Jr.
Right. You know, like, and, you know, I mean, there's a big lack of foresight there. And it's easy for us to say now because no one saw the LeBron-Cleveland relationship, I don't think, deteriorating to this level that it's at currently on Tuesday afternoon.
Yeah.
But still.
Would this have to almost be a sign-and-trade for financial reasons?
To who?
Anyone. I mean, because I don't know if a team can really sign him
really
outright
anymore.
I mean,
I think the goal would be to sign him outright.
The goal, yeah, but if you don't have the money and you still really, like, you may be able to get a meeting mm-hmm. and then try to, yeah, I don't know how the sign and trades
work.
Well,
I know
now.
In the past, and, like, if you read, I don't know if you read Windhorst's book that he put out over the summer about, you know, his Return of the King, I think it was called, just about that whole process. And it was, you didn't get a meeting with LeBron unless you either had the cap space cleared or you had, you know, basically a button you could push and the cap space would be cleared. Like, you had to have, you weren't going there to tell LeBron how you were going to do it. You were going there saying, we have it ready, or here it is, you know, in front of you, not this is what we hope to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't, there's just not a lot of teams that seem to be in that position right now.
That's weird to me.
It is. It's very weird. And it's not just LeBron, you know? I mean, LeBron is old. Every team in the league would love to have LeBron, but it's not like it's just him. You know, there's other free agents out there that are going to kind of be in the same spot. Last LeBron thing, he's no trade. He's one of the few players in the league that has a no trade clause. A source close to him apparently confirmed today that he will not waive the no trade clause, which is probably good. Like, a midseason LeBron James trade, I don't even know how I would process that. That would probably take a couple of weeks for me to like wrap my head around.
You have to take off work for a while.
I would just go on vacation for a while. Yeah. To me that almost seems like a pride thing. Like LeBron, the thought of LeBron
can't
James
get
being,
traded.
Right. The thought of LeBron being traded, I think, like, in LeBron's mind is even a scary thought.
Yeah. What would that do to his brand?
Right.
Michael
Jordan didn't get traded. Kobe Bryant tried to get traded, but was unsuccessful.
Yeah. I don't know. That, to me, that's kind of a non-story. I don't know why he would try to get – I just don't know why he would try to get traded. That's the – I don't know. I don't know what to make of that other than I assume that would be the case. I guess to hear it formally is a different thing. But
I can't even imagine what that package would look like. Like, no one, think of all the trade machine things that you've seen thrown out on Twitter over the years. Like, has anyone ever put together a serious LeBron James trade?
Crazy.
I don't know. This is what it's come to.
That's what happens
Thomas
when
is single-handedly responsible for this.
What?
So Isaiah is single-handedly responsible for this.
Kyrie. Well, see, this is really all just comes
Long
back
con.
To Kyrie's fault. Yeah.
Ugh, man. Okay, well, that's all I have for today. I'm still struggling to wrap my head around this thought of LeBron being traded, which isn't going to happen. But we have, 2 days now until the NBA trade deadline? 3:00 Eastern, I believe it is, on Thursday.
Okay.
We have some pieces coming on the site.
Yeah.
In the next couple of days, we'll have a full recap, of course, on Thursday night. And we'll be back, you and I will be back on Tuesday to wrap up what's hopefully a very eventful trade deadline.
I always love an eventful trade deadline. It's like a holiday to me.
It is.
And
it really is.
So when it's not exciting, it's like when there's no snow on Christmas.
Right. This type of year is a real slog. I was just talking on after the Super Bowl on Sunday with some of the guys about like what's the worst sports month of the year. And like February has to be up there, other than the All-Star game, which I love but a lot of people hate. You have a lot of days without NBA games in the middle of February. Nothing going on in baseball. Football's over.
Yep.
Hockey
is, I think, the main thing
at
that point.
I don't care about that at all. So as a non-hockey fan, that doesn't even register.
Have you been to a Milwaukee Admirals game?
Sure have.
Oh, yeah. We got that going for us.
There were me and about 45 other people were at that game.
Okay.
The halftime show, or not halftime, what do they even do in hockey? Period, an intermission thing?
I think I've seen Red Panda do one of those.
They
put the carpet out. I don't think it was like an Admirals game, but I think there is like
She's
a halftime show.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. The halftime show, this is in air quotes,
okay,
was someone just came out and demonstrated how to do CPR. It wasn't even like a show. It was like a serious, like, hey, everybody, this is how to do CPR. And that was it. Like, I learned something.
It would be more, I'm surprised in Wisconsin that wasn't like a quick hitting, like gun safety course or something, like a hunter safety.
Yeah, like how to recognize the signs of alcohol poisoning.
30 minute
like
course.
Yeah. No, it was just like, we just want to get the word out. This is how to do CPR.
That's important.
That's the last hockey game I've been to. I kind of ruined it. I didn't. kind of ruined it.